Welcome to Chip Health with Dr. Hans Diehl. On today's broadcast, we'll discover effective ways to be healthy by choice and not by chance. Gaining and maintaining optimum health is possible at any age. That's what thousands are learning at the Complete Health Improvement programs offered across the country and around the world. The results are proven. The benefits, priceless. I'm your Chip Health host, Charles Mills. Today I play part two of a phone conversation I had with Dr. Darren Morton about his book, Seven Secrets for Feeling Fantastic. Dr. Morton is a physiologist, an author, in-demand speaker, and senior lecturer at Avondale College in New South Wales, Australia. He's also the director of the Avondale Center for Exercise Sciences. On part one of our interview, Dr. Morton identified the first three elements of living a vibrant life: speaking right, positive self-talk, moving right, using our own body language to boost our spirits, and immersing ourselves in the right environment, filling our world with positive friends and influences. Doing these things will strengthen our prefrontal cortex, which Dr. Morton calls our guardian. This will send positive and constructive orders to the emotional center of our brain called the limbic system, or limbo, as Dr. Morton has labeled it, allowing us to be happy and content even in this mixed-up world. We pick up the conversation as Dr. Morton is discussing one of the most powerful destroyers of happiness, worry. Let's listen.
Worry is a terrible thing. And, you know, it's interesting that probably about 95% of what we worry about never actually happens. Mm-hmm. And so worry, you know, is a very destructive thing. What can we do to counter that? Well, what we know is that by getting that front part of our cortex, you know, of our guardian, very active with positive things, then that actually sends positive messages to our limbo. Mm-hmm. And one of the best way to really get the cogs churning in the front part of our guardian is to ask questions. Now, because questions involve us giving a lot of attention, a lot of focus to the particular task. I'll give your listeners two questions that they can ask themselves that are tremendously powerful for changing your emotional state, if you give them adequate focus and attention. Mm-hmm. And here's the first question. What do I have in my life that I'm truly thankful for? Mm. Now, it's an exercise in gratitude. And the second question is, what do I have coming up in the short term that I'm truly excited about? Now, if you can't, write down at least one item that is coming up in the relative short term that you are truly excited about. I just want to confirm that your life is lousy. Mm-hmm. That's terrible, isn't it, for me to say? Yeah. But it's good news because, you know what, it's easily fixed. I actually believe, and I tell my wife this all the time, that, you know, we need stuff to get excited about. She says I'm a bit like a Labrador puppy. I don't know if you have Labrador dogs over there.
Oh, yes.
But they sort of run around, you know, like they're all excited all the time. And she says, you know, why are you so excitable? And I said, I don't know, but I want to be like this because I think it's tragic as we get older. You know, kids are the masters of being excited, aren't they?
Yeah.
You play a game with them and you've played it 18 times, but then you tell them you'll do it one more time and, yeah, we're all doing it again. You know, they have this innate capacity to get excited. And it's quite tragic that as we get older, we tend to lose that capacity. But when you don't have that thing that you're anticipating, that you're looking forward to, it steals the spark away from life. Mm-hmm. And in fact, my wife often says, you know, sometimes we should all plan. This is one homework exercise I have for the listeners. If you can't say, you know, in the next, you know, month or so, this is the thing I've got coming up that I'm excited about, well, go find something, you know, go book something in, you know, or discover something. You need to have that, because often it's not just the event that adds to our quality of life, but it's the anticipation of the event to come. When I think about those two questions, what am I truly thankful for and what am I truly excited about, they're just core components of prayer, once again. You know, prayer gets us to focus on the things that we are thankful for, you know, that gratitude. And as Christians, we are never without something that we're excited about. Mm. You know, we have a promise that we, you know, can hang our hats on that, you know, it might not be quite a short term. That's why I'm saying go out and find other things, lock things in your calendar. Yeah. But long term, you know, we have this blessed hope and as Christians, we are so fortunate. I believe that that notion of hope, you know, and having something to focus on that creates that sense of, you know, excitement is actually foundational and imperative to our mental health.
You know, Dr. Morton, that is so true. It resonates with something that I experienced a number of years ago. I was on a film crew. We were shooting in San Francisco on the Golden Gate Bridge. We were doing a documentary on the subject of suicide. And while we were shooting, while we were talking to the people at the main gate there going into Golden Gate Bridge, wouldn't you know it, someone stopped their car, got out, and jumped off the side of the bridge while we were filming. We didn't get the image, but we were talking, and we heard the radio call came in. In the car that was parked there, right in the middle of the road, traffic backed up, they found a suicide note. And the suicide note just had these words: happiness is someone to love, something to do, and something to look forward to. And that is exactly what you just said. This poor individual, this young man, did not have someone to love, apparently, in his mind, something to do and something to look forward to. How important it is that we have that anticipation of good in our lives.
You know, that is just absolutely tragic to hear a story like that, Charles. And that reminds me of a book written by Viktor Frankl. And many people are familiar with his name, but Viktor Frankl was a psychiatrist who was actually caught up in the atrocities of Auschwitz, in the concentration camps during the war. And he found himself not just, and he was Polish, he was not just a participant in this horrific experience, but he became, as an academic, he became an observer of it as well. And he started to look at, why is it? He said, we could almost pick who would die next. He said, because they developed this complexion about them, you know. And he said, I came to realize, and what the pivotal moment was, he said, in 1944, he said, when in between Christmas Day in 1944 and New Year's Day in 1945, he said, there was just an incredibly disproportionate number of prisoners in the camp who perished. And he said, and he thought, what is it? Why have so many people perished this particular week? And he said he realized that the rations hadn't changed, the work conditions hadn't changed necessarily, the climate hadn't changed. There was none of that could explain it. And then he said it dawned on him that they'd heard rumors that the Allies were coming, and everyone thought they'd be home by Christmas. And he said when their hopes perished, the people die. And it's so true that without something to look forward to, you know, to believe for a better future, you know, to have that hope is what causes us to live for or die. And, you know, as Christians, we're just so blessed to have that. You know, we need to remind ourselves of it daily.
We're talking with Dr. Darren Morton about his book, Seven Secrets for Feeling Fantastic. He has an acronym called SMILERS, and we've talked about speaking right, moving right, immersing ourselves in the right environment, and looking to the right things. Now we're to the E of SMILERS, and it says eat right. Now, I got to say, Dr. Morton, I look around at the people in this world, and it doesn't look like what we're eating is really all that good for us. We have obesity and diabetes and heart disease, all food-related illnesses. What do we need to know about eating right?
Well, where do we start? You know, I obviously, I'm very involved with the CHIP program, the Complete Health Improvement Program. And what we know is that much of what we eat today is not food. You know, it's food-like substances, and perhaps chippers, those who do the program, are very educated and familiar with what we should be eating and what our eating patterns should look like for optimal health.
Yes.
And it just turns out that those same eating patterns that are great for physical health are also fantastic for mental health as well and emotional health. And I think to sum it up, the most succinctly way I've seen it done was by Michael Pollan, who wrote In Defense of Food. And he said that if I had to just articulate all of the research that's done out there, this is what I would say. And it's interesting that Michael Pollan's not a chipper. I don't think he's ever even heard of the CHIP program, but he said this, it boils down to this. He said, eat food, not food-like substances, which most of us eat. So eat food, not too much, mostly plants. And in fact, I would sort of sway even towards saying, eat a plant-based diet. You know, the whole foods, plant-based diets, you can't go wrong.
Make the connection for us here. Brain health, emotional health, and good food. If I sit down and eat a leg of lamb, or if I eat a steak, as opposed to sitting down and eating some nice lentil soup or some baked potatoes with beans on top of it, what is the difference? What changes in me with those two different meals?
That's a great question. There's a whole complex set of biochemistry that comes along that. To keep it simple, and I think that in so many ways we've complicated food, and this is where the whole nutrition industry has gone off the rail, is what they've done is they've tried to reduce it to what's the low, you know, what is it in food that is good? And if we can find, you know, oh, look, there's a particular phytoestrogen or a chemical or whatever, if we can, oh, that looks like it might be helpful for this particular thing, so let's just mass produce that, let's extract that, pull it out and put it in everything. And so we fortify breakfast foods and getting the next thing, everything's got folate in it or it's got this. You know, and what we fail to recognize is that, you know, God knew what he was doing when he put these, all of these nutrients. You know, and there's probably, you know, millions of little nutrients in there that we don't even have the technology to detect yet.
Right, right.
All of those things in there, in the balance that they're in, working in synergy with each other, that have the positive impacts that they do. You know, and we find them in plant-based food. I think the nutrition industry's made things way too complex. But to keep it really simple, I like to use this little demonstration where I get two bowls, two big glass bowls. And the first bowl, I cut up some lettuce, and I put some chopped up tomato in there and some cucumber and some carrot and dice it together. And you look at that and you think, yeah, that looks fairly full of the joy of living. Then in the other container, I like to put a packet of crisps with a Coke and a thick shake and, you know, some, you know, hamburger chopped up into small pieces, mix it around. And when you look at that little concoction, you're thinking, now I understand why it is that when that's in my belly, I don't feel so good as compared to the other, obviously breeds life.
Yes.
So I think, it, you know, we don't need to make it too complex. Your body thrives on alive foods, you know, foods that are fresh, foods that are first order, as compared to, you know, if we take the beef steak that you, or the lamb, leg of lamb that you mentioned too,
yeah,
you know, we've got to understand that that source of nutrition, if we can call it that, has come, you know, to us in a second or third hand, you know.
Yes.
And I find this fascinating when we look back to, you know, the biblical advice given in Leviticus, where essentially what you find is God, and going back, you know, further and even to Genesis, God says, you guys, the best thing for you is first order foods. You know, it's foods that essentially eat dirt and that's it. And, you know, they're obviously our plant foods and the like. Then he says, oh, if you get really desperate, then he describes what we see as, you know, sort of second order foods. These are the foods, you know, like beef or cows that eat the first order foods. And then we obviously eat the cows. And then what he notes is that the ones you really want to stay away from, and he gives a divine mandate on that, mostly they're the third order foods. You know, they're the things that eat the cows, that eat the grass, that, you know, it's obviously the higher order we can consume, the better off we're going to be.
All right. Well, it just seems then that good mental and physical health, again, as we get closer to that first order, and that is what God had in mind for us in Eden. That's what was there on that seventh day of creation when God stood there with Adam and Eve looking around at the Garden of Eden. I like to tell people that everything necessary for good health existed at that moment. It was right there. What wasn't there? And you can look around and you can look at diets of people today and realize that most of what we eat was not there at that moment. But on that seventh day of creation, Adam and Eve standing there with God, what was there was all we needed. And that is a plant-based diet. That is a life full of sunshine and fresh air and good water and exercise and relationship. That's the kind of life we were built to live. And as we get away from that, and the further we get away from that, the sicker and the sicker and the sicker we become. Working to lower your cholesterol? Great! You'll also be lowering your risk of prostate cancer. Here's why. Researchers have found that the male hormones that play a role in prostate cancer are synthesized from cholesterol. The relationship could also be indirect since some dietary selections, high-fat meat and dairy products, tend to increase cholesterol in the bloodstream. Cut your cholesterol, cut your cancer risk.
Concerned about those extra pounds, high blood pressure, diabetes, cholesterol, depression, and heart disease? I'm Dr. Hans Diehl, inviting you to join the people in the know and enroll in the next CHIP program in your area. It can make all the difference.
For more information about the Complete Health Improvement Program and to transform CHIP's proven results into priceless benefits for you and your family, visit chiphealth.org. We are speaking right. We are moving right. We are immersing right. We are looking to the right environment. We are eating right. And you say in your book, Seven Secrets for Feeling Fantastic, we need to rest right. Now, Dr. Morton, we spend our days hunched in front of a computer. We spend our evenings lounging on a couch. We spend our short nights flopped on a bed. Why are you saying that we need rest?
That's a great question, isn't it? People would think that they should be incredibly rested.
Yes.
Because we move so little, as I indicated earlier, that you know we're 60 to 70% less active than we ever were before. Mm-hmm. The problem is that physical activity is actually integral and important component of us resting well, believe it or not. In fact, when we look at stress, you know, and this is what so many of us do while we're sitting in front of that computer, and when
That's
we bombard
true.
Our
That's
senses true. With all of these, you know, hyper-stimulations through multimedia and the like, is that the stress response essentially gears up our body to do one of two things. That's to fight or to flee. You know, it's the whole fight or flight response.
Mm-hmm.
And both of them are active endeavors. You know, both of them are active pursuits. And the problem we have in our society, and this is one of the reasons why stress is causing all of the problems it is, and so many of us are, you know, just wound up and we can't wind down, is that because we're activating this stress response, which is geared our body to do something active, and yet we don't do that. We just sit there.
Mm.
And so it's counterintuitive, but the best thing we can actually do, one of the best things we can do to help facilitate positive rest, you know, good rest, resting right, like I'll expand on in just a moment, is to actually be more active.
Hmm.
That's one of the best things that can help us, you know, sleep and reduce our anxiety levels. So, yeah, it's an excellent point that you make. It's quite counterintuitive. We think because we're not doing anything, we should be well rested, but that's not the case at all.
Hmm.
What we do need is more active rest. We need more rest of the type that God designed us to have.
Hmm.
You see, we live in this very artificial world, and I alluded to this earlier, but, you know, it's really only been in the last 100 years or so that we, you know, with the creation of the light bulb, that we can now turn night into day. And so whereas, you know, once upon a time, a couple of hours after the sun went down, there wasn't a lot to do, and so we sort of went and shut our eyes and slept, and then when the sun came up in the morning, we rose and got in pattern with those natural cycles. Now, we can flick the computer on or we can flick the light switch. It's effortless to do. It's entertaining. And it just creeps in and eats away at the amount of sleep that we get. And there are some reports that, you know, indicate that we probably sleep, you know, about an hour or so less than we did 100 years ago. And that takes its toll. We now know that sleep or sleep deprivation in particular is incredibly damaging to our health, both physically and emotionally. There is a wealth of research starting to come through now showing that when you're sleep deprived, and so many of us are sleep deprived,
yes,
at mild levels, that changes things like your eating patterns. It's definitely linked to obesity, and it's actually sleep deprivation is linked to a whole range of chronic diseases as well.
My. You know, again, after reading your book, I am very careful in the evening when I want to go to bed. I start making things darker. I start making the lights darker. I don't turn as many on. I sort of try to get my brain in there to start realizing, hey, it's nighttime. It's time to go to bed. Are there things happening hormonally when it comes to lightness and darkness? Are there actually things changing in us in light and in darkness?
Yeah, absolutely. There's actually a little cluster of cells that sit on the top of your optic nerve, your eye nerve.
Uh-huh.
And what that picks up on is the amount of light that's being exposed to. And that regulates, some of the listeners would have heard of, you know, chemicals like melatonin in the brain, which is very much involved in sleep-wake cycles. And what we know is that if you're exposed to too much light later in the day, then it activates that wake response that makes it more difficult for us to get to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
We can actually use that for positive effect as well, because what we know is that when you wake up in the morning, if you can, you know, expose yourself to natural light, that hits these little cluster of cells and starts to readjust your brain to, and it affects the limbo, obviously, to, hey, it's morning time. Time to get up, let's get going, and you're up and at 'em. And in fact, if you can actually incorporate that with some physical activity, you know, something active,
yeah,
the effect is even more powerful. So for those people who struggle to sort of get up and moving, and it takes a sort of lunchtime before the day feels like it should be starting, then, you know, sunshine, natural light in the morning, and particularly if you can couple that with some activity, can work wonders. The whole notion of sleep is we need to learn to value our sleep far more than we do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an important element of resting right. But there is one other element of resting right that the world has largely forgotten, and that is this whole notion, this God-given blessing of Sabbath.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this concept of having one complete day off in the week. This is just tremendously important for our health and well-being. And in fact, I would go as far as saying if society at large could capture the vision for what it is and practice it, we would see so many ills being remedied, both in people's health status, but even in other things like, you know, social dynamics and family dynamics, where, I don't know if the statistics are the same in the US, but about half of marriages now end in divorce in Australia.
Yeah.
And that whole breaking down of the family unit. You know, Sabbath is just a tremendously powerful way to strengthen relationships, because, you know, in that time when we're given the mandate to connect, you know, with ourselves and with our health, with our families, with others, with God, you know, just works wonders for our rest.
And finally, at the end of our Smilers acronym, the S is serve right. We have about 3-4 minutes left on the program. How do we serve right? And how are we serving wrong?
You know, serving wrong is an interesting terminology. Perhaps the way that we serve wrong is to not serve at all.
Mm.
You know, because we live in this society nowadays, and, you know, we many of the units we have our iPhone, and we have our iPad, and we have the i this and the i that. You know, we really do live in an I generation. We've moved more and more to thinking about number one, which is, you know, ourselves. And what's interesting is that when we seek to serve ourselves, we do ourselves a great disservice. What we consistently find, and all the research in the area of positive psychology demonstrates this and testifies to essentially what the Bible's been telling us for several thousands of years,
yes,
is that you know, what really makes our heart sing and what makes us come alive is that when we feel part of something bigger than ourselves, and when, in particular, we get to contribute to that with our signature strength. In other words, those gifts and those talents and those abilities that God has given us, and we all have unique sets of them, when we engage them to make a difference for His cause, you know, to contribute to what He's trying to achieve, to lift other people up, to elevate their plight, then all of a sudden life just takes on absolute new meaning. And, you know, one of my favourite passages from Galatians is actually in the paraphrase version of The Message, where Eugene Peterson says, he said, you know, make a careful exploration of who you are and the work you've been given, and then sink yourself into that. Don't be impressed with yourself. Don't compare yourself with others. But each of you must take responsibility for doing the creative best you can with your own life. You know, and when we do that, trying to build others up, you know, and to playing our part, you know, really that's when we serve in that kind of capacity that life becomes extraordinary. And we meet people like this, you know, and Charles, you would know that when we come across people that are doing that, you know, are practicing that, they are the ones who are flourishing in life, you know, to levels that others who aren't practicing those kind of skills just can't even hope to experience or encounter.
Mm. Well, there you have it, listener. The 7 Secrets for Feeling Fantastic by Dr. Darren Morton is the book. And here they are again. Write them down. Speaking right, moving right, immersing ourselves in the right environment, looking to the right things, eating right, resting right, and serving right. What wonderful words of wisdom. Any final thoughts for us? If someone is saying, okay, Dr. Morton, I want to do that, but it seems hard, what would you say to that person?
I would say to that person that the way you get on a roll is you start rolling. Mm. And, you know, I use that list there as my constant checklist. Mm. When I have a day, and we all have times like this, you know, Solomon said there's a time for everything. There are times when you feel, you know, not 9 or 10 out of 10, and that's appropriate. But on an average day, if you can move a couple of rungs up the feel-good ladder, we know that it does wonders for your quality of life. It does wonders for your quality of health. I consistently look down that list and I'll say, which one am I not doing so well today? Just pick one of them. And what small action can I take that helps strengthen that particular field? And if you practice that, even small steps on a consistent basis, it can have a huge impact on your overall life satisfaction, your well-being, and how much you flourish. You know what? God wants you to flourish, so just do it.
Okay, Dr. Darren Morton, 7 Secrets for Feeling Fantastic, a proven plan for vibrant living. Dr. Morton, thank you so much for being with us today. We appreciate it.
You're welcome, Charles. Pleasure.
And listener, I want to invite you to the website, www.chiphealth.org, for many resources, including this book of how you can live that happy, healthy, vibrant life we all want so much. That's www.chiphealth.org. Until next time, this is Charles Mills, along with Dr. Darren Morton, inviting you to begin enjoying health by choice, not by chance. Goodbye, everyone.